Today, Does Not Compute is once again sponsored by Linode. Anyone who puts stuff on the internet can probably find a great use for their very own Linode server. They provide super fast SSD-backed virtual machines running on beefy server-grade hardware. These boxes have Intel Xeon E5 processors running over a 40 gigabit network spread across 8 data centers. Linode also provides some awesome additional services to help you manage your machines, including backups, Longview for detailed system metrics, and node balancers for really easy scaling. And the coolest part is that Linode servers start at just 10 bucks a month. So this is a full-on VM with root access and all that. You can do pretty much whatever you want with it, whether that's setting up your own private Git or VPN server, or running a private Minecraft server for some of your buddies. They've got you covered. What's even cooler is that if you sign up at linode.com/doesnotcompute using the offer code doesnotcompute20, they'll give your account $20 in credit. So there's pretty much no excuse. You should go check out linode.com/doesnotcompute right now. So we're in kind of another different recording situation again, Sean.
Is it because I'm not in San Francisco, Paul?
Well, usually you're in Santa Cruz, which is fine. I'd rather you be here. But in this case, you're in a different state.
Yeah, I'm in Vermont currently.
So what are you doing in Vermont?
Waiting for the snow to stop so I can go outside. No, it's not that bad. I mean, I grew up in Minnesota, so I'm pretty used to snow and cold and all that. My girlfriend Jamie is checking out a school here. So I came up here for the weekend with her to check it out as well.
That means if she gets into that school, you'd be moving to Vermont?
Right. Currently, it's either a toss-up between Portland or Vermont, and if she's already accepted to Vermont. So if Portland doesn't happen, then I'll be coming here. So either way, I'll be relocating from California.
So what does that mean for your job? Will you be looking for another job? Because, I mean, we all know that programmers have to live where they work.
Well, I can no longer say that I'm willing to relocate to San Francisco, so I don't know if I can keep any jobs. But thankfully, the company I work for, Octopus, I've talked with them about it, and we already have a few remote employees. We have a programmer that works out of Chicago and a designer that works out of Portland, actually. And so it's perfectly fine. They said anytime I need to, I can go remote and won't have to skip any beats.
So you said you're already working with Nick in Chicago, and I know that he's a developer. How does that work? Has that been like a weird transition? Because I know a lot of people are really excited about remote work. They love the concept, but it can be tough to get into. It's a very different way of working, I think, and it kind of scares people.
Yeah, so far it's been pretty okay. I think I can attest most of that to Nick being really dependable. So I know that if I can assign things for him to do, that he will do them. Also, I know that if we do... So like on Mondays, we have catch-up meetings where everyone kind of gets together and talks about what we've been working on and what's coming up. And Nick is responsible enough that he can actually hear things that need to be done. And he'll assign them to himself, which is really awesome. So that really makes it easy for me. If there's things that need to be done and I don't have time for it, what I can do is I can throw them into GitLab or I can throw them into... We've been using Trello a lot and I can just assign them to people and know that it'll get taken care of. Now, I don't know how that works. If you had a lot of coworkers that maybe weren't as type A as Nick is, but so far it's been pretty okay for me.
So you said you have a big catch up at the beginning of the week. How do you stay in sync throughout the rest of the week, though? Like, what kind of tools and methodologies do you use to just stay in touch day to day, kind of the same way you would in an office?
So typically we use Slack. I would say that 98% of our communication is done via Slack. We have million different channels, but most of the dev stuff happens in the dev team chat. Previously, a lot of the devs, like me and Josiah, me and Nick, would have separate private convos going on, which was fine, but that kind of takes away from my productivity. So what we ended up doing is trying to push more of the communication into more of a central dev channel. So that way, when people are sharing links or solving problems, everyone can see that and everyone can benefit from that knowledge. The difference between having private conversations versus having a shared channel where everyone posts more frequently, I think, has been really useful. Because, some of us are more back-end heavy developers and some of us are more front-end heavy developers. You know, having that stream going of knowledge sharing has been beneficial. And aside from that, on Mondays, we usually do maybe a Google Hangout. So that way people in Portland and people in Chicago can hop onto a video call. And that way we can all kind of feel like we're in the same room, have, you know, real-time communication. And then throughout the week, if Nick and I need to catch up on something, Screen Hero has been absolutely incredible. The way that you can just control someone else's desktop so easily and just swap screen shares so easily has been a really, really useful tool.
Yeah, Screen Hero is just absolutely the best. I've used it myself many, many times, and it just blows every other screen sharing tool out of the water. I can't wait until Slack gets it fully integrated. That's going to be just killer. It's going to be so good.
So I don't know if this is pathetic or not, but sometimes just I mean, we sit next to each other so close that our monitors are almost touching. But we use it when we're working on a project together, or if I'm stuck or if he's stuck and we need to think through a problem together, you know, instead of him leaning over all the time or me leaning over all the time, we'll just start screen hearing each other. And it's, I don't know, it just works really, really well.
That's actually a really good idea. I hadn't thought about that, but I mean, it makes sense because even if you are right next to each other, you have to like swap chairs or like switch in and out to use the keyboard and mouse when somebody wants to take a turn. And so that just makes it so much easier because you're both sitting at your own computer and you're using your own keyboard and mouse, but both of you are controlling that one desktop. So that's actually a really, that's like a life hack, Sean.
Well, I think the game changer there is that you can have two mice on the screen at once. So like you said, we don't have to swap between keyboards and mice and all that. Because Josiah uses one of those strange keyboards with the keypad on it. I hate those so much. The spacing is different, you know, so I can't type on it. But that just removes that issue, even though it's maybe a small issue, a nitpicky issue. It's just not there. It's not something I have to think about. So I can take that extra brain power and try to solve whatever problem I'm solving.
For sure. So back when I was at Octopus and, you know, I had kind of had some talks with people there about going remote, kind of something that always concerned me a little bit is that I was leading the dev team at that point, and I wasn't quite sure how that was going to work with the person leading the dev team being not there. So now that you're actually in that same position where you're talking about going remote while leading a dev team at the same company, in fact, do you have any like thoughts or concerns on not just some of the developers being remote, but actually you leading dev not being there?
Yeah, I thought about it quite a bit, actually. And there are some reservations that I have. But honestly, I think that it'll just take some more effort on my part. So there's a number of things you get for free just by being on location with multiple people, right? You kind of get that back and forth banter. So that's actually how we started this podcast. You know, you and I would have some banter going back and forth about different topics. In that banter, there's things that Josiah and I teach each other, you know, without having to think about it. He just says something off the cuff about what he was reading, and that might spark an idea in my mind, or that might spark something where I go and research and you know, and benefit from that exchange. I mean, granted, there's Slack, right? But I feel like I treat communication coming from Slack a little differently than I do in-person communication. And by that, I mean, I tend to try to get notifications just off of my desktop. I don't like those little red circles. I can't stand them. I have a thing where I have to get rid of them. And so half the time, I feel like I'm only going into the channel to get rid of notifications. So on my part, it might just take me actually, you know, trying to be more genuine with how I read that stuff, or treat it as importantly as an in-person conversation. That's something that I know that I will miss, is just kind of off-the-cuff banter while we're waiting for the coffee to brew, or while I'm waiting for test to run or something, you know, just kind of in-person interactions. So another thing that we've been doing that I think will actually really help is we've been having a scheduled dev-only meetings on the calendar. And I know, Paul, when you worked at Octopus, we did this off and on, but it was never really like a steady thing. So every Thursday at 11, because Nick likes to go to the gym at 2 his time, we'll have a really quick meeting. And it's kind of like an open format. So we'll either do things like if someone wants the code reviewed, we'll do that. If anyone has a new tool that they want anyone to check out, they'll talk about that. But it's also been really great in kind of a support group fashion. You know, if someone's feeling frustrated or someone feels like, man, I'm just not doing as well as I think I should be doing, it's been really great to just discuss that sort of thing. And even though Nick is in Chicago, you know, having him on screen, it feels like he's there, which is amazing. And it feels like it boosts the morale for everyone involved. So I'm hoping that by having more interactions like that, even if I'm in Vermont or Portland and Nick is in Chicago and Josiah's in Santa Cruz, by kind of fostering that camaraderie more, I'm hoping that it'll make us tighter, which might negate some of the issues that other people might bring up about remote work.
So it sounds like there are a lot of extra things that have to be taken into consideration is the main thing with going remote. It's not necessarily that anything is impossible. It's just that there's a lot more to think about and new challenges to figure out how to deal with. That is fine, but do you think that it's a concern with lost efficiency because of all that additional overhead? Or do you think that can be mitigated by having a team that knows each other really well and is willing to work towards that common goal? Do you think that you'll be able to get past it because of that?
I absolutely believe that we'll be able to get past it. So the big thing is that it's just going to take some more intentional effort, and intentional is the key word there. If I were to suddenly move away and treat how I approach work the same way, obviously I don't think it would work out that well. So it doesn't necessarily mean that I'll have to work more hours or work harder during the hours that I'm working. It just means that I maybe need to approach things differently in how I catch up with the team or in how I schedule things that need to be done with the other developers. And I think that's totally acceptable. I mean, just because you have developers that are remote, it doesn't mean that things aren't going to be efficient or that things are just going to fall apart, you know. It just means that maybe you have to adjust your approach with how you work or how you communicate. And again, I think by being intentional, you can completely solve that problem. So if there are areas where you're struggling, like say you're feeling a little bit more isolated, you know, attack that problem. Don't just let anything fester.
So now that we've gone over some of the potential cons and kind of how you're planning on dealing with those, what about some pros? What are you really stoked about having a fully distributed team?
So I guess we can answer that question in two different parts. The first part being what I'm excited about personally being remote. And that is, while I understand that I have to be around for clients at certain hours of the day, I work really well early in the morning and late at night. And being remote, there's nothing stopping me from working early in the morning and late at night and just being around for Slack messages during the day on my phone or something like that. So I guess when there's an office, I feel pressured to be there. And I know I've been told before, like, you don't necessarily have to come in. You know, if you're feeling like you want to stay home and be productive for a couple of days, you can totally do that. But I still kind of feel like there's a little bit of pressure to go to the office or at least be seen at the office by other people, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a morale thing. When you know somebody lives in the area and you know that they are, quote unquote, supposed to be there, whether or not they actually are supposed to be there, when there's just kind of that feeling, when there's that culture of we have an office, people feel like they need to be in that office, even if they're explicitly told otherwise. Like, it's just kind of I think that's a pretty natural feeling.
Right. And I feel like in being remote, that just removes that pressure altogether, apart from, you know, being available to answer questions or something like that when other people are working, you know. But I'm really excited to find out what my natural rhythm is. Like I said, in the mornings, I'm really productive. In the evenings, I'm really productive. But it seems like in the afternoon is when I have the most trouble thinking. It's when I have the most trouble communicating. So, you know, I'm hoping that I can get into some sort of pattern where in the morning I can power through, in the evening I can power through, and during the day I'm maybe outside exercising, you know, enjoying the sunshine, getting vitamin D back into my body because I'm probably deficient, you know, just getting into a more natural rhythm as opposed to I know that I have to be in this chair at these times whether I'm productive or not.
And like you said with the client thing, obviously you do have to be around not just for clients but also for the rest of your team. But it's the difference between being available and being productive. Like, you don't have to actively be doing development work during the day as long as it's getting done. But you do need to be available. You need to be on Slack or you need to be getting to meetings. Whatever that definition of available is for your job, you need to make sure you're doing that, of course. But when you're productive can be a totally separate time. Basically, the time you're around during the day isn't so much for you to get stuff done, it's for you to help other people get stuff done. And so I think that's a really important distinction that a lot of people miss. It's like, well, you're still going to need to be around during the day. And it's like, yeah, but I can do all my work at 3 a.m. and nobody cares because all my work is done. The only reason that I need to be around during the day is to answer questions or ask other people questions.
Right. I really, really like the point that you made in the difference between being productive and the difference between being available to answer questions. And that's something that I struggle with. doing at the same time on it, like quite honestly. You know, I lead a team of other developers, and I can say that half the time when I'm asked a question, that my mind isn't able to fully respond to that because my mind is still churning on whatever problem I was working on, which to me can be an issue. You know, if the developers are looking to me to provide insight or answer questions and I'm not able to do that effectively, then that's hindering my job. And I just happen to be in a position where I'm not fully management, I'm not fully programmer, I'm doing both. So maybe having time where I can separate that, where, you know, this is, I'm wearing my developer hat now and I'm developing, versus I'm wearing my management hat now, I'm answering questions, I'm managing. You know, I'm thinking that that in the end will make me more productive. And to answer the second part of the question, I'm excited on a company level, you know, because we'll have devs in different time zones. So I feel like when designers ask devs questions, there'll be someone around all the time, you know. But also, we will be able to plug into different communities, whereas Nick can plug into the Chicago community and learn from whatever people are interested there. You know, I can plug into maybe the Portland community, the Vermont community, if there is one, and if not, I can start one. But just a diversity of people, right? Around different cultures, different people, around different interests. You know, we can all glean from those things and bring them back into Octopus and apply them to Octopus to make it more diverse.
Oh my goodness. That is actually a lovely, lovely segue to the second thing that we wanted to talk about today. So we have an article by Aryun Shah. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm probably not. But this article is called Contempt Culture. And basically, the idea behind this article is that a lot of times in programming, and this is something that we've kind of talked about on the show a bit before, I guess, with the elitism that there tends to be in this industry, where people are like, oh, well, you're using PHP, you're not a real developer. Or, I mean, in the past, that's even been something that JavaScript has been targeted with a lot. Oh, like JavaScript development, that's not real development. And kind of the point of this article is that not only is that kind of just a rude thing to do, but it actually actively hurts the community. So there are so many ways, especially within a community that has a very large segment of people who are self-taught. Within being self-taught, there are so many different paths to learning. It can be somebody who says, okay, you know what? I'm going to sit down and learn how to write C. And I'm going to make my first program in C. And I'm going to learn all these fundamentals. I'm learning all about algorithms and all that. I'm going to teach myself. That's a totally legitimate way of being a self-taught programmer. But it can also be somebody who starts off by just learning a little bit about DevOps, just enough to deploy a simple WordPress site. And then, of course, their clients start asking them, hey, I want to customize things. So they start learning a bit of CSS and some JavaScript, and then maybe additionally some PHP on top of that. And kind of what happens is that they start out thinking that they want to do one thing. It's like, oh, maybe they want to be a designer, right? And that's actually kind of how I started. I was like, oh, maybe I'll be a web designer. And then through that path, I just kind of naturally found my way to back-end development, whether that was PHP and then eventually Ruby and Python and whatever else that became and still will become in the future, that just happened to be my path. And either of those paths are totally valid. But when you say, oh, language X is just kind of whatever, you know, no real programmer uses language X, you're actually actively excluding, in some ways, diverse pathways from the community. You're taking all of these completely legitimate paths to learning to become a developer and then saying, well, this one sucks. No one should do it that way. Nobody should learn that thing because that's lame. Who cares about that? That's the worst. And when you think about it like that, it's like, oh, wow. Maybe I shouldn't be criticizing these things so much.
Yeah, I myself actually took the second path as well. So when you hired me at Octopus, Paul, I had been making WordPress themes for a couple of years, and my JavaScript experience was, let's take this jQuery plugin, let's take that jQuery plugin, let's just make a soup out of it, you know? And while that paid my bills for a while, I was really lucky to come into a place where you weren't like, wow, this is terrible, you know? you made your living during WordPress. Why would you ever do that? That's terrible. You know, you didn't make me feel bad. You helped me learn, which was incredible. But I'm not going to say that I was ashamed to say that I was like that person saying, oh, this language is terrible. You know, this doing it this way is terrible. Even though I didn't know much myself, you know, I was making WordPress themes. I was really quick to be judgmental towards what other people were doing. And I feel like most of why I was like that was because I wanted to be accepted by other programmers. You know, I wanted to learn from them and I wanted to be accepted by them. And one of the early things that I tried to do in learning was I would go into IRC channels, you know, IRC channels, Paul, and I would ask questions and I would just get buried. Like, you don't know how to do that. You know, what is Google broken or something? You know, and all I wanted was a simple answer or an explanation to an answer. But instead, I would get buried for not knowing something, right? And so my response was to just pass that on. And if I felt like if I could pass that on to other people, then the other programmers might think that I'm cool enough that they can answer my question.
That was absolutely my experience in the early days as well, where I didn't know very much myself, but at the time I was significantly more judgmental of other programming languages and tools and methodologies than I am now. And I think that partly was because I felt like if I projected this air of knowing more than I actually did, that would somehow get me some sort of weird, horrible acceptance. And I mean, it turns out that that's the last thing I want. Like, that is the exact opposite of what I'm shooting for in the end. But I think the temptation there is very real, especially as somebody who is new to programming, to criticize other stuff. But just remember that that's not helping anybody. All that's doing is excluding people and making them feel bad and like, oh, maybe programming's not for me. And of course, I don't think anybody is going at this saying, okay, I'm going to criticize these languages because I want to make these people feel terrible. Of course, that no one is saying that, or at least very few people, I hope, are saying that. But as is pointed out in the contempt culture article, intent is not magic. Intent doesn't actually really matter that much. It doesn't matter what you mean to do, but the actual outcome of your actions is super important. And if somebody's saying, you know what, this makes me feel kind of bad, like you're making fun of the thing that I make my living off of, and that doesn't feel great, it doesn't matter whether or not you meant it that way. It means that you should probably think about rephrasing it in a nicer way.
That's one of the arguments I hear most, or one of the defenses I hear most, honestly, and that's one that I used to use quite a bit. I know, Paul, you know me personally, but the listeners might not, and I can be really cut and dry sometimes. I can be very blunt sometimes. And when I was younger, I would always defend myself with, oh, you're just being sensitive, instead of, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. You know, my response was always, you're just being sensitive and you're just reacting to what I said, and your reaction is your problem. When really that's not the case. You know, I've had to reverse my thinking on that, and I've had to apologize to a lot more people, you know, after reversing my thinking on that, because their reaction is reaction to something that I said, something that I caused them to feel.
Yeah, and this, of course, gets into a lot more than programming. This is a much deeper subject, but especially in this particular case, it's very, very relevant. Because this is something that actually does make people feel bad. Going into an IRC chat room back in the day felt like the worst thing ever. Because if you weren't already an expert, you would just get dogpiled. There were very few friendly spaces for newer developers. And now, thankfully, with communities like Spec, I mean, that's awesome that we have that now, at least more. And I really do sincerely hope that keeps growing, and I want to keep pushing forward there. But back in the day, it was pretty bad, and it actively made a lot of people feel not good about what they knew and what they wanted to know and learning. Like, I want to make sure that people never feel bad about wanting to learn, right? That's kind of one of my big things in life as a whole. Like, learning is the best thing that you can do pretty much ever. And I just think that when you say, oh, JavaScript sucks, no real developer cares about JavaScript, which for newer developers out there, this actually was a thing back in the day, believe it or not. People have made fun of JavaScript developers a lot. But when people say those things, who does it help? It doesn't. It helps no one. So even if it doesn't hurt anyone, maybe just kind of consider it in the other way, right? If you don't care about intent and all that stuff, that's fine. You know, that's your choice. But consider it from the other side of who is this helping for me to say this? Who is benefiting? And I think when you really think about it, the answer is going to be no one.
Totally. And I challenge any of our listeners out there, if you're sitting here thinking, because I used to be this person, oh, I don't need to check my intent. You know, other people are just more sensitive and I really don't need to check my intent. You know, I'm just fine. I'm really challenging you to check your intent. You know, if you find that you're offending people often, maybe you need to change how you're saying things, or maybe you need to consider those people. I think the biggest thing is that I was a pretty selfish person and I wasn't considering anybody else. You know, I was considering how I was thinking and how I was feeling and how I wanted to respond. And I didn't care how that affected other people, when really that's incorrect. That's an incorrect response from you to disregard other people. So, I mean, I'm saying this to myself as well, but really challenging everyone to think of the other person first before responding with something that you know. Because, I mean, you know when you're responding with something critical. You know exactly what you're doing. It's just you're much easier at brushing somebody off. Next time you feel that feeling you get when you want to respond critically, think about the other person first. The world will only be a better place.
Thanks for listening to episode number 27 of Does Not Compute. Today's episode was brought to you by Linode, a super fast, easy way to spin up virtual machines. Their servers start at just $10 a month and are billed hourly, so you only actually pay for what you use. Linode has awesome server-grade hardware running over a super speedy 40 gigabit network, and you can have your own private VM up and running in literally seconds. Make sure to check out their website at linode.com/doesnotcompute and sign up with the offer code DOESNOTCOMPUTE20. By doing that, you'll help support the show and get $20 in Linode credit. Once again, thanks for joining us for another episode of Does Not Compute. If you're a fan of the show, we always really appreciate iTunes ratings and reviews. We'll have a link in show notes where you can do the rating thing. It takes just a couple seconds and really helps spread the word. Sean and I would also love to talk to you on Twitter at DNCcast or in the Spec Slack at spec.fm/slack.
Oh my gosh, Paul.
You should probably just start that little bit over, because
yeah.
I kind of lost you too.
My brain's...